Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on the Brian Lehrer Show, Mayor Bill de Blasio joins us live at 10:30 after his public mea culpa yesterday about charter schools.
We made some decisions in the last weeks striving for fairness. But I have to tell you, I didn't measure up when it came to explaining those decisions to the people of this city.
Whoa, Mayor de Blasio yesterday at Riverside Church. He'll expand on that here in a half hour from now. Also, we're conducting a musical instrument drive to collect your gently used instruments to give away. Today, we'll also collect your musical instrument stories about an instrument that has meant something to you in your life or your favorite instrument's greatest moment coming up later. But first, Hillary Clinton's Ukraine problem and Paul Ryan's race and class problem. The Republican Party is beginning to use the Russian invasion of Crimea to paint Hillary Clinton as a failed Secretary of State in advance of her possible presidential campaign. But one of their leading lights for the White House is getting much more heat for something he said the other day. House Budget Committee Chairman Paul Ryan, who was Mitt Romney's running mate in 2012, you'll remember, said this about inner city poverty.
We have got this tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular, of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work. And so there's a real culture problem here that has to be dealt with.
Republican Paul Ryan from Wisconsin, chairman of the House Budget Committee and a potential presidential candidate, in a radio interview about 10 days ago now. With us now to talk about Ryan's race and class problem and Hillary Clinton's possible Ukraine problem is Politico senior political reporter Maggie Haberman. Hi, Maggie. Welcome back to WNYC.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So the firestorm over Ryan's remarks has not gone away, even more than a week later. And I want to actually play a longer version than gets played elsewhere. Usually it's just exactly that little soundbite that we played. And it begins with the question he got in that radio interview. And we'll hear, in addition to the thing that's being called racist and tone deaf, what we heard, how he asked people outside the inner city to get involved. And he also references Charles Murray, who's been called a racist himself, for his old book about race and intelligence and education. The question here comes first.
Okay. But, I mean, a boy has to see a man working, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
And so that's this tailspin or spiral that we're looking at in our communities. You know, your buddy Charles Murray or Bob Putnam over at Harvard, those guys have written books on this, which is, we have got this tailspin of culture in our inner cities in particular of men not working and just generations of men not even thinking about working or learning the value and the culture of work. And so there's a real culture problem here that has to be dealt with. Everybody's got to get involved. So this is what we talk about when we talk about civil society. If you're driving from the suburb, you know, to the sports arena downtown by these blighted neighborhoods, you can't just say, I'm paying my taxes, government's going to fix that. You need to get involved. You need to get involved yourself, whether through a good mentor program or some religious charity, whatever it is, to make a difference. And that's how we help resuscitate our culture.
Paul Ryan on the radio there, Maggie Haberman from Politico on the radio here. And I'm not sure that that's not one clip in which the fuller context makes it worse. This is classic Ayn Rand-loving Paul Ryan, isn't it? If someone is poor or unemployed, it's because they don't have enough personal responsibility?
I think that, right. I mean, I think that there is no question that the remarks sort of harken back to an earlier moment with Paul Ryan, and I also think that I think that it is very much not what he is trying to project, which is why I think that his supporters feel, you know, are arguing that it was, you know, unfair or taken out of context. But I don't think that I think that if you speak to them on background, they're not arguing that. You know, this is Paul Ryan. A major theme of his in the 2012 campaign, or an attempted theme of his, was to try to focus on poverty and to try to focus on urban poverty in particular. And he was never really able to, in part because Romney aides didn't want him to. But I mean, I think as you suggest, I think that whatever it is he says he is attempting to say, I don't think it came through.
Plus, even in 2012, his approach to poverty was to end things like food stamps and Medicaid as federal entitlement programs if you're poor enough, give less money as block grants to the states, and let everybody start doing with it what they will in New York and Mississippi and wherever else.
That's right. That's right. And I mean, look, it's a philosophically different approach, right? I mean, so, you know, I think as you correctly said, I mean, this goes back to the Randian view, which he was, going back to 2012 again, much mocked for at the time. You know, I think that this is where, when you look at the breakdown of what happened in the 2012 election and you hear people talking about it, generally speaking, you hear people say, you know, that there was a rhetoric issue. The issue that, if you listen to a lot of Democratic pollsters, that Republicans had was a policy issue. And if you look at where Republicans, well, I think that they obviously have, at the moment anyway, have the wind at their back into 2014 and the midterms. For 2016, when we are talking about electoral votes, Democrats feel very good. I mean, you know, yes, with the caveat, especially if Hillary Clinton is the nominee, Democrats feel very good about the possibility of demographics carrying them through. And this is not just messaging. This is not just speaking about a policy with a smile. It's that the policies, you know, and certainly Democrats will put a very fine point on this, are becoming harder for Republicans to defend.
And we'll get into the 2014 midterms a little later and the new projection from the 538 site that the Senate now has a 60% chance of going into Republican hands by the end of this year. But just on that, Ryan, to finish up, I also wondered about the end of that clip, whether it would strike people more as a call to get involved in poorer communities than one's own, or if it sounded a little colonialist to tell his white suburban audience, as you're driving by the inner city, think of getting involved as a mentor, like go teach those uncivilized natives how to live.
I don't want to impute motive on him in terms of what he was trying to say. I think that if you look at or what the actual intent was of the remarks, I think that if you look at what he said, there is a logical reason why people were upset about it. And I mean, I think that, for his defenders who have not understood it, I think that that is problematic.
I will say, in fairness to Ryan, that President Obama also talks about the need for cultural change. And particularly as Ryan was talking about men, I've mentioned several times on the show that I was at the 2008 Democratic Convention.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there?
I was.
And when Obama had that line about fathers needing to stay involved with their children, and he meant whether they're custodial fathers or not, that was, to my ear, the biggest applause line that he got in that whole speech.
No, I think that that's right. I mean, look, but we are talking about more than just rhetoric here, right? I mean, we are talking about policy, and we're talking about how you get into which element of the policy you're talking about. But certainly, the concern is the same, and this is something Obama has talked about a lot. It is something that he has drawn on his own experience for. Which I think is a very key distinction here. But I think that it's – I don't think that where Paul Ryan was attempting to come from to your question about, you know, what was behind it, I don't think where he was attempting to come from was a bad place. I just think that his language needs – I think his language certainly needs a sharper focus. I don't think you'll hear him repeating that
betrayed
again.
Where he's coming from. In his gut, because even if they're saying similar things, he and Obama on culture and responsibility, ultimately, as I think you were suggesting, the policies that they arrive at afterwards and who it places the onus on are very, very different. So how's that 2016 field shaping up on the GOP side with Ryan and many others? It seems incredibly wide open, and it looks to me a little bit like with Chris Christie's appeal fading as being the across-party lines candidate. There's some rumbling about Jeb Bush as the new Chris Christie. What do you make of that?
I think everybody is looking for that Chris Christie was the stand-in for whoever is the front runner on the right for the establishment coalescing behind. Jeb would be that person, even frankly, if Christie were in. So Jeb would trump Christie. The name is problematic for Jeb, as he has acknowledged, and he says, you know, Clinton's name is a problem for her too. That is a total false equivalence. The Clinton name is nowhere near the drag in politics that the Bush name is at the moment. It's just not the same thing. Bill Clinton especially is extremely popular. Hillary Clinton's numbers have gone down a bit since she left state, but she's still doing very well. On the GOP side, though, I don't tend to believe that Jeb Bush is ultimately going to run.
Oh.
I do believe that you're going to see him look at this a lot more. I think the donors reaching out to him have certainly made him think. But there is no obvious person if there is no Jeb, and then if there is no Christie. Christie's people are not throwing in the towel. It's just that it's very hard for people to envision Christie being able to go forward in this way.
And meanwhile,
but in terms of the actual field, you know, there have been a couple of very good pieces, one in the Times, one by the Washington Post, Dan Balls, in the last couple of weeks, about how we're not dealing with the typical problem of establishment wing versus conservative, that basically the party is segmented into four at this moment. And I think that's right. I mean, one of the things you've heard, I believe it was Joe Biden who had a version of essentially saying it's not a party anymore. And I think that's a little too far. But I do think that something very unusual is happening among Republicans right now.
Maggie Haberman from Politico with us on WNYC. Mayor de Blasio coming up at 10:30. And meanwhile, there is that other party which hopes to keep the White House and that certain leading lady you've been writing about recently and who you just mentioned. And you wrote an article the other day called Freezing the Field or Human Shield. What do those terms mean with respect to Hillary Clinton?
Well, she is sucking up all of the oxygen on the Democratic side. There's very few people other than Martin O'Malley and Joe Biden who have said, you know, she's really not impacting what I do. And the reality is that most donors are waiting for her. Most donors are waiting to see what she does. And that's been going on for a while. You can make an argument, and some of her supporters do, that, you know, people are privately suggesting she is hurting other people, other potential candidates, by having something of a protracted process for making up her mind. Her supporters argue that that's not true at all, that in fact, she's the one who is absorbing all of the body blows from Republicans and keeping lesser-known Democrats like Martin O'Malley from attracting Republican or, you know, national media criticism or any form of attacks. Remember, Martin O'Malley especially has had a bit of a rocky rollout with the health exchanges in Maryland. That would be getting a lot more national attention, one could imagine, were it not for Hillary Clinton freezing everything.
And it's still, though, do you think it's by design? I mean, Hillary Clinton, I guess she wouldn't want to announce prematurely, but then again, the first primary, they say, is the money primary. So,
well, Hillary Clinton is going to win the money primary, whether other people run or whether they don't. The Clinton donor ties go back so long. The Democratic donors want to win. They see her as the best hope. So I think she doesn't have anything to worry about there. What you have to worry about in terms of getting out too early is peaking too soon or seeing your numbers go down or, you know, being treated like a candidate. She's right now in something of this sort of netherworld of non-candidate candidate, and so she doesn't get the kind of criticism she might otherwise.
On the other hand, you wrote a piece earlier this month called Hillary Clinton's Ukraine and 2016 Problem.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, certainly on conservative talk radio, and I think some of the politicians themselves, definitely some of the politicians themselves on the Republican side are starting to say, look, if she was such a great Secretary of State with respect to Russia, look how she cozied up to Putin here, cozied up to Putin there, and look what he's doing now in Crimea. What's their argument, and how much can we say that she can take any blame for Putin's invasion of Crimea?
She can't take any blame for what Putin did. I mean, the reality is that the reset policy was not her policy. The reset policy was the Obama administration's policy, and as former Ambassador Mike McFaul has made the point very publicly and very clearly and repeatedly, she was privately much more skeptical about Putin than others in the administration were. This was, you know, depending on who you – some people will argue, no, she encouraged this policy. McFaul argues otherwise. What she does have a problem with is that picture of her handing a reset button to the foreign minister where it was meant to send, and there was the wrong word inscribed on it, which at the time was the big deal. But now it's mostly just a picture that Republicans are going to use to make a point about her. The Wall Street Journal had a story the other day suggesting she's tacking right on foreign policy to open up a bit of daylight with Obama. I would argue she's not tacking right. I would argue she just is to the right of Obama on foreign policy on many issues, and so she's sort of highlighting where she actually is. I don't expect her to open up a whole lot of room between herself and Obama on domestic policy. And so I think where you're going to see the differences get highlighted is on foreign policy, which voters tend not to pay as much attention to.
All right. One thought about this year before you go, the political predictions blog 538 from Nate Silver, of course, has gotten pretty much every state right in the last two presidential elections, says there is a 60% chance that the Republicans will take the Senate in the midterm elections this year. If that happens, what would it mean for the Obama presidency in its last 2 years and for public policy?
I mean, I think that it would mean that very little would get done. On the other hand, I would argue that not that much is getting done right now. But I think that you are going to see things ground to a total halt as opposed to an almost total halt.
Almost. Well, could it be any different from Republicans just having the House? Because we know they can already block any new law he wants passed with one House control, and they do.
It's going to essentially subvert whatever workaround Obama has been able to use and Boehner has been able to use by using the Senate. That will end because there will not be any legitimate cover anymore.
Maggie Haberman, senior political reporter for Politico. Maggie, thanks a lot for starting us out today. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. We'll talk up to Mayor de Blasio's 10:30 appearance with Ozzie Pabra from Capitol, New York. We'll hear a little more from that speech that he gave yesterday at Riverside Church that included a mea culpa. Rare for any politician at any time on any stage, a mea culpa on how he communicated his charter school policy the other week. Stay with us.